He's dead.
Dead?
Murder it would have to be.
Who the hell are you?
Marple, Jane Marple.
There's something wrong.
You have a theory about who put the poison in the marmalade?
Not a theory, Inspector. I know.
You sound like a professional, Miss Marple.
Oh, no, Mr. Fortescue.
Miss Marple, the woman who knows who put the poison in the marmalade. She's, of course, the creation of legendary English crime writer Agatha Christie. Over the course of her career, Agatha Christie killed off 300 characters. Some were drowned, others were stabbed, but her favourite method of killing was poison. Arsenic, cyanide, hemlock and thallium. She had a vast stock of poisons, in fact. Science communicator Catherine Harkup has a PhD in chemistry and she's been studying how Agatha Christie mixed her lethal doses. She spoke with Michael Cathcart for Books and Arts.
I think I read Agatha Christie, I first started reading her when I was a teenager and I loved her books, so I've always been a fan. But when I was working in a lab and I'm dealing with some dangerous compounds, some potentially lethal compounds, you start to wonder how these tiny, tiny little amounts of little white powders can do so much damage to a person. And so I started reading about them. And when you read about toxicology and poisons, Agatha Christie's name comes up quite often.
You mean in the scientific literature she gets mentioned?
It's certainly in popular science books about poisons. Yes, her name does crop up just because she is recognised as being so accurate and using such a range of different compounds to kill people. So she's quite well respected for her accuracy and the amount of research she must have put into it.
So just remind us who Agatha Christie was.
Well, she was born in 1890 and she, during the First World War, she volunteered as a nurse in her local hospital. And when she was working there, it was suggested she might like to work as a dispenser. So she trained to make up pills and creams and salves and to add potentially dangerous compounds in appropriate doses to these different mixtures. It was when she was working there that she came up with the idea of writing a detective novel, and surrounded by all these poisons, what else was she going to choose as her murder weapon? So she used poison in her first book and it was a huge success, and her career was launched from there. 83 books later, she's the best-selling author bar Shakespeare and God, I believe.
So in developing the various poisoning scenarios for her books, I gather that she took inspiration from some real-life poisonings.
Oh, absolutely. Quite apart from doing quite detailed research into the poisons themselves, she must have done a lot of research into real-life poisoning cases. There are some famous cases like Dr. Crippen that many people are familiar with, the man who poisoned his wife and apparently buried her in the cellar of his home and then ran off with his mistress, disguised as a boy. She used that plot, the man who kills his wife and runs off with his mistress, in one of her books. And there are various other true life stories that you can see. Maybe she switched the poison, maybe she altered a couple of details, but she used the rough outline of the plot in her novels.
Does cyanide crop up in Christie?
Oh, it's her favourite poison, I would say. She kills more people with cyanide than perhaps any other poison. I think her grand total was 19 people killed with cyanide, but she's quite creative. It's in champagne, it's in coffee, cigarettes. It's even injected into one unfortunate victim to make it look like a bee sting. So all sorts of people die very, very suddenly from cyanide poisoning. And the key clue that Christie often gives is a distinctive smell of bitter almonds.
Did she ever get the science wrong?
Oh, very rarely. So cyanide is one example where she gets a detail wrong. She describes blue cyanosed fingers in her victim. And cyanosis is a real medical condition. Unfortunately, it's not caused by cyanide poisoning. You're more likely to go a kind of pink colour if you're poisoned with cyanide. But I suppose her biggest mistake, if you want to call it a mistake, is in her use of ricin. It was in a very early short story, The House of Lurking Death, which I believe was written in 1928. And she describes the use of ricin poison. The way it's administered isn't terribly feasible, and the victims die far, far too quickly. Unfortunately, ricin poisoning, it's going to be a few days before the victim finally succumbs. But I can hardly blame Christie for this lack of knowledge, because when she was writing, no one, as far as we know, had ever been murdered with ricin. The first case, Georgi Markov, was 50 years later. So she was kind of guessing a lot, I would assume. And for all that, she doesn't do too bad at all.
Also, Agatha Christie doesn't really want to upset us, because no one's really murdered an Agatha Christie story. It's all just a sort of premise for some, you know, jolly good carry-on, isn't it, really?
Oh, absolutely. The murder is just the detail, just the excuse to set a problem. It's almost, yeah, it almost happens quite often off stage, so you're not confronted with the grisly details.
No, it's all as benign as a cryptic crossword, really.
Absolutely.
Now, earlier this year, a couple of academics at Queen's University in Belfast claimed that they had developed an algorithm which helped readers identify the killer in an Agatha Christie novel. So they looked at various factors. One was the method of dispatch and one was the setting. And they reckoned if you factored all these different variables in, they actually produced a formula that would help you predict who the actual murderer was. Did you look at that research?
I wish I'd seen that research before I started rereading all of the Agatha Christie novels, because I am rubbish at guessing who done it. So I reread all 83, I guess, correctly once. Mm. Then, of course, much later, I read about this formula and thought, oh, that would have been quite handy to know.
It didn't look handy to me, Catherine. It looked like gobbledygook to me. But you have a PhD in science, so perhaps you could...
Oh, it looks suspiciously mathematical to me. Mm. I'm not sure it's the same thing.
I think it's completely dodgy. But I was wondering whether you'd thought of looking at the gender of killers. I wonder whether women are more inclined to use poison as a method of dispatching someone they want to kill than men are, because poison has this kind of, well, domestic availability, I suppose.
It does, and John Curran, who's written brilliant books about Agatha Christie, did actually tally up the murderers and look at the gender differences. And Agatha Christie is extremely egalitarian. It's a 50-50 chance, if you're using poison, that it was a man or a woman. Poison is always assumed to be a woman's weapon, as you say, because of domestic availability. But the fact is that women are far, far less likely to kill than men. So actually the proportions, even though women within all murderers within women are more likely to use poison, the number of poisoners in men and women is about equal.
What's next for you? Have you got another literary science connection to explore?
Oh, I do, actually. I'm hoping to look into the science behind Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Oh, how delicious. That's a wonderful topic.
I think it's going to be wonderful. I'm only just starting on my reading and my research, and it's going to be lots of gruesome details and fantastic stuff. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right. Well, in 3 or 4 years, I hope you and I will talk again. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Catherine Harkup, a chemist and the author of A is for Arsenic, The Poisons of Agatha Christie. And Catherine was speaking with Michael Cathcart, who of course presents Books and Arts on Monday to Friday.